And good afternoon, and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Laurent Landis. Our guest today is mayoral candidate Marcos Ronquillo, mayor of Dallas is what he's running for. We're going to talk to him in just a second. We have terrible news to start the show with. We just found out this morning that Jack Jett passed away.
Regular Lambda Weekly guest.
Yes, he's been on any number of times. I first met him probably 1995. We had scheduled him on, had no idea who he was. He came in full costume with his yellow rubber gloves and, I mean, just nutty Jack. And we didn't do podcasts at the time because there was no such thing. And we kind of said, you do realize this is radio? And he said, yeah. that's how it started.
And your point.
And your point is.
And I remember him several times over at the crack house where we were. And, of course, multiple times here in the new studio.
Yep.
That was my first time meeting him at the crack house, and I remember David saying, today's show is going to be a little different.
And I was a guest on your show when you were doing TV with him.
Did the TV show with him, right. Yeah. And always a lot of fun to work with, but apparently he had had some heart problems about 5 years ago, apparently went into the hospital last week. We found out this morning that he passed away yesterday. So I put up the podcast of the last time he was on Facebook, or you can just go to YouTube. Mm-hmm. If you search for Lambda Weekly, Jack Jett, you'll find it. So our guest today is Marcos Ronquillo. I don't want to dwell on the sad news, but we have a challenger for mayor. That doesn't always happen when somebody's running for re-election. Marcos Ronquillo was a former law partner of Adelpha Callejo. He's been putting together
a longtime legend, by the way, civil rights legend in Dallas.
Yeah. You told us before the show, Marcos, that you've been putting together your campaign for about a year. This is not just a, hey, I'm going to run for mayor because why not? So you've been putting your campaign together for a while. What are some of the issues that got you to run?
Well, I think first and foremost, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to visit with you this morning. In a word, neighborhoods. I lived in Lake Highlands over 30 years. We raised our family in Lake Highlands. I've practiced law for 35 years. I've had the pleasure of representing just about every major political subdivision in the city, either as their bond counsel or as their litigation counsel, and worked on significant cases like the DISD desegregation case and worked on Richardson's desegregation case as well. Understand the challenges of our public schools, our urban public schools today. And working and looking at the infrastructure of our city, it came to my attention that, we're not doing very well. I mean, we're doing well as a region, fantastic, but we're not doing very well as a city. And having read several books, Perry Conner's Second World on infrastructure, the U.S. gets a D+ from the American Society of Civil Engineers with respect to infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And then Benjamin Barber's book, If Mayors Rule the World. And I think all of us know we have gridlock in Austin and gridlock in Washington, D.C. And I think truly the mayor's office can make a difference because that's where the rubber meets the road. That's why I decided to run for mayor.
I do have to say that with some of the horrible take control of local governments bills that are going through, the anti-trans legislation, the anti-gay legislation that's going on, we can only hope there's gridlock in Austin this session.
Absolutely.
And thank God they only meet once every other year.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we have to be very mindful of, I think it's House Bill 343. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need to be very mindful of those very draconian ordinances that basically strip away our local control. Once again, taxation without representation.
Of silly things that they're annoyed that we've decided to ban unreusable plastic bags. Why they're annoyed in Austin, I guess because Austin has the same ordinance, and when legislators are down there, it's annoying them to take a bag with them to the supermarket.
It's called the Californication. Californication of Texas. Thank you.
I think it's indicative of a national trend, too. Mm-hmm. If the federal government doesn't act, let's say, on immigration, or if our state government doesn't act on adequate transportation funding, then we almost force our cities to basically do what was supposed to be done at the federal level. Mm-hmm. We force our cities to do what's supposed to be done at the state level in Austin. So our city government, because of the gridlock, is becoming more and more important, because we're actually having to step in and fill those voids mm-hmm. for our citizens that live here, our residents that live here.
Right. And like 10 years ago, the major issue was potholes.
Right.
When Laura Miller was running, she just pounded and pounded away at potholes. And I think that's what got her elected. It's not potholes anymore, although...
There are still potholes.
There are plenty of potholes, and especially after all that ice.
I have 311'd like four times in mm-hmm. the last month, yeah. and yeah. I, you know, that's a lot for me.
Well, I know
there's a great picture where Marco's on the pothole.
That's where I announced my campaign, standing in a pothole on Samuel Boulevard between a tire shop and a liquor store. What can I tell you? But, I mean, when you mention potholes, I also see you have a pothole, the one I'm standing on, or the ones, the legendary ones on Lemon Avenue, and you also have the Trinity. Mm-hmm. They're symbolic of the same thing, basically. It's not so much a toll road, and it's not so much a pothole. It's what they represent, and that means more community engagement. That means there's a disconnect between our government and the governed. And the Trinity, to me, is just a solution. I mean, it's basically a solution in search of a problem. And to me, the potholes basically represent we're not taking care of our neighborhoods.
Well, I can find some problems if it's in search of a problem. One of them is we build the road and then it floods.
Absolutely.
How do we get rid of that unless you right. want to just pave the Trinity, which is kind of how Angela Hunt, when she was on, described it, that we'll just drain the Trinity and pave it, because why not? We can do that. Okay, so that's shaping up as one of the major issues of
absolutely.
This campaign.
Absolutely.
How did it become the toll road from what it originally was? I think when people originally voted for it, different people had different things in mind, but I don't think any of them saw a superhighway between the levees.
Well, I can't help it. I'm still a lawyer. And I served as bond counsel for the city of Dallas, so I'm familiar with ordinances. If you look at the 1998 issuance of $246 million general obligation bonds for the Trinity River Corridor, you'll hear that these project bonds are to include floodways, levees, waterways, open space, recreational amenities, the Trinity Parkway, and related street improvements and other related necessary and incidental improvements to the Trinity River Corridor. Nowhere in there do we mention $1.8 billion 6-to-10-lane toll road. And nowhere do we mention in there that there's traffic studies that justify a toll road.
Now, I grew up in New York, and so I have one particular vision of what Parkway means. It's two lanes in each direction. It's kind of winding, tree-covered, closed on Sundays for bike riding. That's what a parkway is.
Right.
Absolutely no tolls on it.
And, you know, there's always the comical thing about the Americans' use of that, and that's, you know, we park in the driveway and we drive in the parkway. So.
Well, I studied and I lived and worked in Washington, mm-hmm. so to me the GW or the Rock Creek Parkway, you know, it defines a parkway. And that's what our voters voted on back in 1998. And they also voted for $246 million for a related bond program. My question to the voters and to your listeners this morning is, gee, if we voted for a $246 million bond package for our park, why in 2014 don't we have our park? Mm-hmm. And why in 2015 are we still talking about a 6-to-10-lane toll road? There's a disconnect there. There's a disconnect between our government and, once again, our governed.
Mm-hmm. I'd just like to ask a question about that very thing, the disconnect. You know, historically and forever, city elections have been the lowest turnout elections around, and yet they're really the most important. There are streets, there are infrastructure, there are parks, you know, and big issues like, you know, big ticket items. Why do you think that is? That I mean, some of these districts are won with like 1,000 votes. You
right.
know, it's a sad thing. It makes my heart sad
right.
to think that people don't come out and vote in these elections.
Absolutely, and there's a large segments of our society, especially our minority community, and also our young people, that they just don't come out and vote. There's a high degree of apathy. But I think one reason that we have that apathy is because, unfortunately, a lot of folks feel disconnected, disenfranchised, and feel that their voice or their vote really doesn't matter. And this election is to bring a voice to those folks that don't have a voice. You know, there's 400 neighborhood associations in Dallas, both big and small. I would argue that the big neighborhood associations don't have a voice, and I would argue that the little neighborhood associations don't have a voice. And worse, City Hall is not structured the way it's set up to even hear them if they had a voice. Mm-hmm. And I want to change that. So we do have a structured City Hall, a culture City Hall, where first and foremost our priority is to build neighborhoods. And when you build neighborhoods, don't you think the first sign of respect is to consult with neighborhoods? I'm told that our most successful community-based projects didn't come from City Hall or Austin or D.C. They came from community-based organizations. Mm-hmm. So we need to listen to our community-based organizations. They have the answers if we'll just listen to them.
Mm-hmm. You know, Patty, when you say those local issues are the ones that affect you the most, and so city elections are so important, you know, we kind of laugh about, yeah, we need to fill in the potholes. Laura Miller won on potholes. Mm-hmm. I remember she kind of stole a steamroller one day. Somebody from the city works department had arranged that on a Saturday there was a steamroller out somewhere in one of the neighborhoods around Love Field, and arranged for her to drive it. And so she
in 4-inch heels.
Probably.
Oh, yeah.
So,
of course.
We love Laura Miller.
I love it. So,
right.
Cool.
So she showed up, and they got her on the steamroller, and she invited all the TV news cameras, and here she is, you know, she's filling in potholes. But she did win on that because she said we have to redouble our efforts in the neighborhoods. And when you say it's the most important issue, lots of things affect people, and it's great that you pay attention to national issues, but if I can't get to work in the morning, that affects me more than anything.
Or if it costs you $200 to replace that tire, or possibly a wheel, because you hit a pothole that was so deep it could swallow your car.
I would have made more money by not going to work that day, possibly. You know, it's,
absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. But I think that at the same time, too, I think the difference is it's not just the potholes. It's the vision of where do we want to become mm-hmm. as a city.
Yeah.
And so the Trinity is also a symbol. I'm being told, and I truly believe, that the decision on the Trinity, whether to build a park the way we contemplated back in the Balanced Vision Plan back in 2003 or what we voted on in 1998, that will define our city for the next 50 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, Dallas is not defined by mountains and beach line. Dallas is defined by highways and toll roads. We have the largest collection of toll roads in North Texas than any other part of the country, for mm-hmm. God's sakes. So what I'm saying is that we need to look at this as a park issue. Lakes, sailboats, and parks for our community. Make that our central park. Let's don't destroy that with a toll road. So it's more than just potholes. It's the vision of what we want our city to become. And more importantly, the symbol of toll road basically talks about the old style of Dallas politics and a 1950s style or policies with respect to highways and transportation. Mm-hmm. We're a lot smarter than we were 20 years ago with respect to traffic and how we need to invest in our infrastructure. But to me, the secret sauce is our neighborhoods.
Mentioning transportation, Dallas obviously is growing and becoming more populated by the year. Dallas-Fort Worth, you know, I kind of laugh when you look at other major cities and their public transportation compared to ours. And DART is getting better as far as the rail system. But do you think that's the answer, more rail lines or more highways?
I think the answer is better public transportation. I'm told in our the great cities of the world that they have one thing in common, and that's a fantastic public transportation that's used by the middle class, lower to moderate income folks, and by the affluent. When you have a public transportation used by all segments of society, that tells you you have a successful transportation system. Our challenge in Dallas is not to move cars. Our challenge in Dallas is to move people and to connect neighborhoods. We aren't doing that. We're destroying neighborhoods with toll roads and highways.
Mm-hmm. Patty, do you take DART at all?
Oh, yeah, I love DART. I'm a DART evangelical. I try to – I proselytize.
I've never heard of that term, Patty.
Yeah, I proselytize, and you can ask Erin because she just rolls her eyes when, you know.
Okay, well, Laurent, you used to take it to work.
I took DART to work for 7 years every single day. I miss it. Where I work now, there's not even a stop for it, so I really don't even have the choice.
You've been saved.
Yeah. But if I could, I would definitely take it.
Take DART again.
Yeah, take DART again.
And When I was living in Oak Cliff, I used to take Dart to my office up here in Oak Lawn. And I'd take my bike, I'd ride my bike, weather permitting, ride my bike to the Dart station and from the Dart station to my office. And I love doing that. Right now, I live close enough, but Dart won't get me there. But I can take just my bike, and I love the bike paths also. Right, and that's right. Another mode of transportation that we do seem to be working on that will help transportation. And you kind of laugh and say, how bike path transportation in this city? You'd be surprised how many people use those bike paths. Right. The Katy Trail
absolutely.
Is dangerous right. because of all the traffic.
Right, right. And then plus, you know, you have major studies done by federal government and statewide government, and even our local government, that basically say the traffic is on a decline, if you can believe that. Mm-hmm. Traffic is on decline. And also with our younger generation, they're less inclined to own and use a car. They're not going to be wedded to the cars that my generation was wedded to or our parents were wedded to. They want to basically use public transportation. They want to walk and they want to bike. They want to use other means other than cars for them to get around. And we need to be cognizant of that.
And that's why I think we kind of suck in terms of public transportation in Texas in particular, because there is this sort of mentality that everybody has to have their horse. You know, I mean, you know, you don't have a car, you know. It's, right. You know, and Paul Williams, a comedian, you know, a local comedian here, you know, said one time, if you're walking in the city of Dallas, people think you're homeless. You know, they stop
true.
And give you money.
That's
you right. know?
We need to take a break, but a perfect example of that was my first house in Oak Cliff. There was a 7-Eleven on the corner. And on Sunday, I used to just walk down the street to pick up my Sunday paper. And I'd have people, this happened multiple times, they would stop, hey, do you need a ride? No, I'm just going to the 7-Eleven. I'm going to the 7-Eleven. No, no, I'll drive you down there. It's right there. I'm okay. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Laurent Landis. Our guest is mayoral candidate Marcus Ronquillo, and we will be back right after this.
This is Jake Winters from Leicester, England, and I listen to Lambda Weekly on KNON 89.3 FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis and the late Patty Fink. Our guest is Marcus Ronquillo. He is running for mayor. We were just talking a little bit about Dart, and one of the things Dart has done is created a lot of development around the Dart stations, which is great. But we were just looking out the window here, and across the street from the station, there's a new apartment complex going up with very expensive rents, and there's a Dart station across from it. You walk across the parking lot and then to the Dart station, so it's very accessible to get to that Dart station. I'm thinking that people who are paying several thousand dollars a month in rent are probably not riding Dart to work, unless maybe they work in one of the downtown towers. I doubt they're...
Or they're doing the loop around up to Plano. You know?
Maybe some are.
But depending on where they work in Plano.
I'm thinking that if it was more moderately priced housing that was going up around the Dart stations, you'd have more people who would say, not only is the rent reasonable, but it's across from Dart. Nobody's saying that at thousands of dollars of rent. They'll rent the expensive place, maybe drive to a Dart station if it's convenient. But I don't have a car, like you said, Patty. Lots of people don't have cars. What about development like that? Shouldn't that be more mixed?
You're absolutely right. You know, when we look at programs like Grow South or Neighborhood Plus, we need to look at it in a more integrated approach. The dilemma is that you need to have a combination of mixed income housing in your neighborhood. And if you're going to do that, you also have to provide the necessary public transportation system, especially in the southern Dallas. And so when you have programs like Grow South, when you have programs like Neighborhood Plus, transportation has to be a real key component. And more importantly, if you don't have mixed income neighborhoods, that means you don't have mixed income families sending their children to public schools. Everyone knows when a public school has mixed income families, low income kids are better off. And when you don't have mixed income neighborhoods, the folks in the middle class, the folks that are climbing, you know, the ladder of economic prosperity, if they don't have an alternative in terms of the housing stock and the neighborhoods they want to live in, guess what? They're going to vote with their feet, which we have noticed here in Dallas over the last decade. And that means that you're going to have less of an income tax base. That means you're going to have a narrower tax base. And that means if you have a narrow tax base, that means less revenue for what? Basic city services that what? Fill potholes.
And that's my point with it may be a very expensive complex across the street from us, but that's all they're building in this neighborhood, pushing out anybody who was living here who can possibly afford. You know, I write for Dallas Voice, and one thing that we've done is, okay, there's a new apartment complex here, and I know our advertising people have gone after the advertising for these places that are, you know, hundreds of new apartment units. It's in the middle of Oak Lawn. We thought advertising in the gay paper was an obvious thing, and the response is, that's not part of our marketing plan.
And to make matters worse, again, going back to our 1950s approach to transportation, mm-hmm. We're so wedded to highways as being, you know, being the answer. And the problem is every time you build a highway, that lessens the density of that community. Mm-hmm. It divides that community. And when you have less density, that means less of a tax base. Mm-hmm. When you have less tax base, that means less revenue. You know, Einstein has been quoted oftentimes as saying, you know, we cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. And that's basically what we're doing. Every time we have a traffic problem, let's build a highway. Mm-hmm. Every time we have a traffic problem, hey, let's do a toll road. That is basically destroying Dallas. Mm-hmm. And we're now becoming a glorified bus stop on the way to the suburbs.
Well, I think, you know, in talking about transportation, I love the public-private partnership that's going on through D-Link, which is downtown, the dart bus that's dedicated, it's wrapped, you know, with the D-Link logo that circulates all the way through a little bit of uptown and comes back all the way through downtown and goes down to Bishop Arts, mm-hmm. and comes back and it just circulates like, I think, like 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. or something. And I'd love to see more of that, like one that would do the same thing through downtown that would go to Deep Ellum. And come back just east-west and maybe call it Deep Link, you know,
and just
do it, because a lot of those downtown folks could go to eateries and shopping in Deep Ellum during the day and come back.
It would help keep those businesses in business in Deep Ellum.
Yes.
Because they don't have a good track record.
Right.
You know, you touch on a real important topic that's near and dear to my heart, and that is connectivity. You know, they say that in Uptown they contribute close to $6.2 billion to the local economy, downtown roughly $4.3. But what if you had a scenario where you actually, and it was formal city policy with respect to housing and transportation, where you connect Uptown with downtown, with Deep Ellum and Fair Park, and you have boulevards, bike trails, walkways, restaurants, eateries, recreational, entertainment, and you connect those neighborhoods, that drives up your tax base. Mm-hmm. That drives up your neighborhoods in terms of development. And that means that we can have some enlightened development where, you know, if a person wants to come in and develop, we said, that's fine, but in that building, put in the first floor a pre-K program. Mm-hmm. And for every floor that you build up, can you donate, you know, 2 or 3 acres of park space? So it's more of an enlightened approach to economic development. We don't have that here at City Hall. But that connectivity issue, you are right on. I mean, that's what we need to do. And if we do that, that inner city core, you know, right now Dallas, except for Memphis and Detroit, has the poorest urban core in the country today.
Wow.
All right?
Wow.
And over, since 2004 to 2011, we have lost $3.3 billion in taxpayer revenue that contributes to this ever-narrowing tax base that we're losing. In other words, our middle class is slipping away.
Hmm. One of the things you mentioned before was DISD, and in Texas, the independent school districts are separate taxing entities. It's the school board that appoints the superintendent. It's not like the mayor controls those things. So what can a mayor do to help improve the school system?
That's a great question. You know, I had the pleasure of representing just about every superintendent at DISD going back to Linus Wright. And I've represented school districts in the past. And to me, it's very clear in that 159-page charter, there's nothing in there about education, right? And I can't help it. I'm still a lawyer, right? I'm sorry. Okay, I'm working through it. I'm working through it. But the point I'm trying to make.
I'm impressed he read it.
the point I'm trying to I can't help myself.
That's an attorney.
I'm surprised he admits to these.
I got to get a life. I know. But the point I'm trying to make is the mayor, he or she leads by example. And just like you have a Neighborhood Plus program, you really have to me, a great city is just a collection of great neighborhoods, and every great neighborhood has an excellent public school system. Mm-hmm. And so just like you want to have a wraparound around your neighborhood policy, a 360 wraparound, you want to have a wraparound around your local neighborhood school. You want to integrate those assets, you know, with the library, recreational facilities, NGOs, religious and nonprofit entities. That little local elementary school or junior high needs to be a 360 wraparound, but it needs to be integrated with the city's Neighborhood Plus program, and we should have at the City Hall basically one department. That should be a Department of Neighborhoods.
Do you know, in my old neighborhood down in Oak Cliff, when they built the new junior high school on Hampton Road at Keast, they put the library next door, and they're connected by a breezeway, and that library is packed all the time. I mean, it was brilliant. Why aren't all the libraries connected to a school?
And that Wi-Fi should not be an issue.
No.
Children don't need to go to the local McDonald's to get a Wi-Fi signal, mm-hmm. so they can do their homework. In a society, in our country, in our city that's so rich and so affluent, that kind of stuff just should not happen. But that just means this. It means that until you have an integrated system, like a super neighborhood organization that's interfaced with a city hall that's been reconfigured and recalibrated to interface with those neighborhood organizations so they work together in true public-private partnerships, the DISD, the Dallas Independent School District, will be limited to just a bunch of individual heroic efforts. We got to have a sustained, disciplined, and systemic approach in our efforts to assist and help the Dallas Independent School District. We're not doing that. And unfortunately, the city of Dallas is into silos. They're not equipped. We don't have the capability from a structural standpoint to even do that. And that's why I love this Neighborhood Plus that the city is trying to come up with. All I'm saying is they need to have a lot larger focus, you know, in southern Dallas. But if you don't have a network or a network of community-based organizations to really work with, mm-hmm. in a true public-private partnership, not a top-down policy saying this is best for your neighborhood, but what I'm saying, a community-based policy that's driven up where the city is really seen as a servant of the neighborhoods, mm-hmm. not the reverse. And unfortunately, we have the reverse right now.
One of the best examples of a neighborhood working with a city, and my new iPhone that I'm constantly fighting with, always forget to turn it off.
Well, if you wouldn't diss it so much, it might cooperate.
Yeah.
Talk badly about it all the time.
One of the best examples of a neighborhood working with a school is the Sam Houston School, which is located right behind JR's and the other bars right on Cedar Springs, and the school is right behind. And there was some worry by the bar owners and store owners that there was going to be some limitations on selling alcohol in the neighborhood, what could be in the stores, that kind of thing. So the bars preemptively decided to adopt the school. It's one of the poorest schools in the city,
right.
And they started buying the kids coats when they found out that it was, you know, 20 degrees out and these kids were coming to school without coats, buying them school supplies at the beginning of the year for Christmas, asking the kids what they wanted, and each kid getting to ask for something. I remember one of the first years, one of the kids asked for a computer, and you know the principal said, "Well, we can't get them," and somebody said, "Yeah, we can," and just adopted these kids in the school. It went from being a failing school to I don't know if it's exemplary, but it's doing well. But it's completely an example of the neighborhood.
Making me feel old, though, because you were talking about wireless for kids to do their homework, mm-hmm. and stuff. I can remember we weren't allowed to use a calculator.
Right.
I wasn't allowed to use a slide roll.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I was going to say we didn't have calculators.
Kids,
when
you
I
remember
was
a slide roll out there? That's so funny.
I remember using a slide roll.
Okay, thanks, y'all. Making me feel really young. But that goes right into what you were saying about neighborhoods. You know, if you want to help neighborhoods, ask the neighborhoods.
Right, right. Well, it's sort of like, and I give you a clear example of that. You know, in part of the campaign is I'm going out to all parts of the city and had a chance to sit down with some of the leadership of our good folks and friends in Deep Ellum. And, you know, that's a great recreation, entertainment, music, you know, cultural center of our city. And the concern there was, you know, putting in a charter school next door, and then having a rehab clinic two blocks down. I mean, boy, that's a lot going on in one neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And then reducing the number of police officers to take care of that neighborhood. If they had consulted with that leadership, you know, they probably would have had something to say about, you know, putting in a charter school or something to say about, you know, putting a rehab clinic. So you have these kids that are, you know, being dropped off and picked up, and you have these issues. And so you have to consult with the neighborhoods. But if there isn't a framework, an official recognized framework to get that input, we're going to continue to have a disconnect.
Hmm. Yeah. And I think, too, you know, one of the things that my partner Aaron and I live over in Old Lake Highlands. So we're
Lake Highlands boy.
Yeah, and we're Old Lake Highlands, and we're, you know, like just south
old.
Of Northwest Highway.
You're old.
Yeah, we're old. We're mm-hmm. old. But, you know, like Hextra Elementary School is a great school right in our neighborhood. And one of the things I think that's really brought a lot of neighborhood people together, even those that don't have kids, you know, like us, are, you know, like the gardening projects, which I think is really kind of exciting. There are neighborhood gardens. There's a school garden at Hextra. Right. There are lots of things in support of neighborhood kids that take place. You know, we have the White Rock local market, which is a huge success. Right. And, you know, just all of those neighborhood things. And I think it's really telling that so many neighborhoods do have, if you just, you know, like, you know, slide back the curtain and look, you see some great stuff going
really
on.
Do. Mm-hmm.
You know?
And how can we replicate that? It's sort of like with the Dallas Public School System, there's pockets of excellence, right, in any system, right? How do you replicate those pockets of excellence? I was at a candidate forum yesterday in White Rock, for the White Rock Lake Highlands Democrat meeting, and we talked about community gardens. Hey, I'm all for community gardens. That is great. All I'm saying is that let's integrate it, and let's replicate those best practices, and let's get the city really behind it. So there's no issues with respect to zoning. There's no issues with respect to drainage or flooding. And that we integrate, you know, the young folks and the school systems with those kinds of programs. And we integrate, you know, our local food and produce economy so it actually will assist and remove food deserts. But, you know, I think City Hall needs to exercise that leadership. And the mayor needs to exercise that leadership. Whoever's in that seat, they need to make those kinds of things a priority.
You know, going back to darts for a little bit, I was going to bring up an example. When I used to take dart, there was this kind of joke that Dallas was actually divided into two separate cities, north of downtown and south of downtown. And everybody who lived up north, we got off at in downtown Dallas, and we didn't go any further than that. And people would always joke, if you stay on the line, I think it's the blue line, you would see South Dallas. It's a completely different world. And, you know,
nicer as far as I'm concerned.
You know, and, you know, we're one of the most racially diverse cities in the country. But sometimes if you, depending on where you go in the city, it doesn't really reflect that. What can the mayor do to make Dallas appear as more of just one city?
I think there's a couple things. And the first thing is, in order to solve a problem, you have to recognize there is one. And don't get me wrong, I applaud, you know, the mayor for doing the poverty task force and all the members, and I was part of that too, all the members and their recommendations. But it's kind of troubling that if you don't recognize a decade-long trend where Dallas in this last 10 years has the largest concentration of children in poverty of any city in the country today with more than 1 million folks. In these last 10 years, we've seen a growth of 38% children living in poverty.
Wow.
So it's gotten worse.
And with respect to our population, there's been an increase in our population of 41% of our Dallas residents that fall below the poverty level. Okay? So when you recognize those growth trends, and they're not all good statistics, right, then you have to ask yourself, really, is a poverty task force the answer? Aren't we really, aren't we just rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic at this point? And what I'm saying is that you need to have a systemic, disciplined approach to dealing with neighborhoods, like the Neighborhood South program, dealing with the Grow South program. But if you don't understand the fundamentals of poverty, how are you going to be successful in Neighborhood Plus? How are you going to be successful in Grow South if you've got to put together a task force to understand poverty and why is it increasing? And then the worst statistic, the Brookings Institute came out just a few days ago. Last year, Dallas was ranked number 13 in terms of the economic divide of the top 50 cities in the country. Today, we're ranked number 7. We have jumped 6-7 spots nationally in terms of the economic divide between the most affluent and the most poor. And a telling statistic with respect to those cities that have that kind of an issue is that you have a lack of mixed income families attending public schools. And if you have that, that hurts your low income children. Then you also have a lack of a middle class. And the Dallas Morning News has already documented in their editorial, the middle class is slipping away, you know, here in Dallas. So you can't just react to that by creating a task force. You have to reconfigure and restructure City Hall. And then you have to assist neighborhood groups and community-based organizations to interface with City Hall to basically attack poverty. And until you do that, you won't have a successful Neighborhood Plus. You won't have a successful Grow South. And you'll continue to have a city that's divided by wealth and by class.
Why don't we take our break? You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here with Patty Fink and Laron Landis. Our guest is Marcos Ronquillo, who is running for mayor. The election is on May 9th.
I should know that.
We'll be back
Thank you for the help.
We'll be back with more right after this.
Hi, this is Patty Fink, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet, and we're here with the late Patty Fink, and who is early today?
Yeah.
I got my I'm late phone call, but and Laron Landis, who's visiting us from Garland.
Right.
I only mentioned that because
we love our friends in Garland.
Yes, we do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I want to mention what our friend in Irving did, Rabbi Frank Joseph, who does the show before us. He did the invocation at the Irving City Council meeting on Thursday, I think it was. Somebody in my office came in and said, do you know a Rabbi Frank Joseph? And I said, yeah, sure, he does the show before us. He does the Jewish Music Hour. He said he just gave that city council a what for. He did the invocation. They were voting on a no Sharia law bill or
right.
ordinance. It passed. He called them out as bigots and just told, you know, and he said to me just before the show, he said, well, at least my conscience is clear.
He so did all he could.
He did what he could. Did what he could. But, yeah, we don't have to worry about Sharia law going on in Irving now. Thank goodness. I'm worried about an invasion from Irving, though.
Well, the earthquakes have been
the
coming.
Earthquakes are in Irving. Yeah, we're feeling them here. They need to stop. I think that's Sharia law.
Who among the LGBT committees is in charge of earthquakes? Because we're the cause of all these catastrophic weather events.
I would say probably Raphael McDonald.
Is he the one? Is he on the earthquake and volcano committee?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah,
yes,
we need to talk to him about either doing a better job in Irving and getting more over there, or bring him over to Dallas so that we could actually have one.
While we're talking LGBT issues, because this is the gay and lesbian radio show. You know, thinking about it, Mayor Folsom went to speak to Dallas Gay and Lesbian Alliance at one time, soon after he was elected, and the Morning News got wind of it and put it in the paper, and he said, well, I didn't know what DGLA stood for.
My, have we come far.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes,
exactly.
Yes.
So we haven't even, here on the Gay and Lesbian Radio Show, we haven't mentioned LGBT issues at all. Because in Dallas, it's come to the point where it's assumed that you're going to support our issues. We're a major part of this city.
Right.
You know, before the show, I asked you, what's your position on it? It's like,
help me out.
No. Yeah.
Did you see the New York Times article this morning?
No, I didn't.
In the, I think it was in the either arts and culture or the lifestyle section, where it was, and it's a good piece on where is the gay population moving to and living these days.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a correlation between a better, more fundamental, more open understanding of the issues in this community. And the fact that you no longer have just the bastions of a place to go to seek refuge.
Mm-hmm.
And that you're starting to see places like Utah, like Louisville, where you're starting to see these kinds of populations grow and develop.
Missoula, Montana is a big one.
There you go. All right. Okay. But
well,
to me, it's more
Plano.
Indicative of enlightened,
yeah.
enlightenment. And, you know, going back to my former law partner, and she's like a surrogate mother to me, Adolfo Callejo, the whole issues of equality. Although we haven't been talking about specific issues, we have been talking about equality this morning.
Mm-hmm.
We've been talking about equality in terms of where you live, where you work, where you play, where you raise your children, raise your family, whatever. And to me, we're talking about equality in this community as well. And I'm happy to say, hey, the last 35 years of my life, I'm a military brat, lived all over the world. It's all about equality. And we live in a great society, you know, a great country. Yes, we've got a lot of work to do. But at the end of the day, it's tolerance, it's enlightenment, it's willingness to go out and understand. And I believe that, you know, I have a very unique perspective with respect to that endeavor because my whole life has been, you know, about equality. I come from the south side of Tucson, Arizona, went to college in the Midwest, went to law school back east. When I came to Dallas in the summer of 79, it was culture shock in a sense. You know, wasn't used to the transportation system and, you know, a lot of the nuances, you know, here in Texas. And now I'm happy to say, hey, I'm a Texan by choice now. I'm a Dallasite by choice. But I recognize that we have a diverse set of communities here. And I think the challenge of any mayor is to represent those communities, but more importantly, bring those communities together. And I've had a track record of working with diverse communities, building a consensus, and moving towards a resolution for a common goal. All of us want a better Dallas. I don't care what your political, you know, persuasion is, what your orientation is, what color your skin, what church you go to. All of us want a better Dallas. And I think a mayor needs to understand those diverse perspectives and work with a diverse community and be comfortable with that diverse, you know, community and be able to lead a diverse community. And I think I'm very unique in that respect.
You know, and one of the reasons that I didn't even think to, ooh, where does he stand on these issues? You were a law partner of Adelpha Callejo, who I have to say was probably the first big name in the city to come out for gay issues 30 years ago, if not the first. There was certainly Juanita Kraft and Harriet Earhart and several others.
Absolutely.
But at that time, when they came out on our issues, so did Adelpha.
Right.
It didn't even occur to me to ask that question.
And today, you know, so many people think of Oaklawn and even within our own community nationwide, people think, oh, Dallas, Oaklawn. But the reality is that we have LGBT households in every neighborhood in the city.
That's right.
I can, you know, probably rattle off 30 just in my voting precinct that I can think of, and that's not even all of them that I know are there. And it's just something, you know, that special about Old Lake Highlands, although it's very near and dear to my heart. But it's, we're everywhere, you know, we're in all neighborhoods in every district. And so these days of where a politician can say, well, I don't have any gay people in my district, which has happened before, you know, it's
recently.
It's gone. Recently.
I mean, it's sort of like thinking that our art in Dallas belongs in the arts district or is limited to the arts district.
Right.
Right.
Come on, and if you go back to that New York Times article this morning, it you see a good rendition of how the population, the community is spreading, and you know, in places you would never think. And to me, that just belies the tolerance and more enlightenment and more progressive outlook with respect to all of us.
Oh, I think it was money. They were saying, hey, watch where the gays go, and that's where you invest.
Well, that too, but I didn't want to say it. No, just kidding. No, but it's a good piece.
Let's talk a little bit about – oh, go ahead, Patty.
I was going to say, back in the very contentious 2000 election, and many young people may not even remember that, sadly, but the Gill Foundation out of Colorado did a study – an exit polling and a study of voting habits among LGBT people, and found we don't know how many LGBT people there are because many people don't answer pollsters. They certainly don't self-identify on a census, and the census doesn't ask it. So we don't know, but we know minimums. And this study found that at least, at minimum, 5% of the voting electorate self-identifies as lesbian, gay, bisexual. There hasn't been a recent study on transgender voting, but that's a serious I mean, that could have changed the election in 2000. It can change the election in Dallas.
It doesn't sound really big, but it is.
It is.
That's a big electorate block. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you consider the amount of votes cast in a municipal election, or and the difference between a winner or a loser for a city council seat or a school board seat, you know, for that matter. Yeah. That's huge. It definitely makes a difference. But more importantly, it's the right thing to do. whether it's one vote or 5,000 votes.
I love the way Obama got held this week for suggesting if we had mandatory voting, everything would change. Of course, the Republicans and Fox News don't want mandatory voting because they know that would overturn everything that they're working to destroy. But lots of countries have mandatory voting, and it's not that big a burden to go to the poll and vote.
Well, you know, the Wall Street Journal did an interesting piece a couple years ago. In Mexico, it's mandatory, right? And in Mexico, you know, you get fined if you don't vote. So obviously there's a high percentage of voters, right? But the election for a president only has a very limited shelf life. And the election for a president has a limited amount of funding. And parties aren't even allowed to start their politicking or their election until a finite time right before the election. I think there are some things that we can learn, you know, from other countries in terms of how we can – we have the cherished right to vote. And if we don't use it, then there's something wrong, basically, you know, with that.
We can learn something from other states, too. This last week, the state of Oregon – passed a law that that basically mandates automatic voter registration at driver's license registration and at the DMV. It's the first state
to opt out.
Yeah, you have to opt out. It's easier to register to vote than it is not to.
Right.
And for the first time, and if we had that in Texas, of course, I don't expect that to happen in Austin.
Well, I could see, but not for your driver's license. It would be automatic with your gun license.
You're concealed. Or your open carry, I guess.
Yeah, there you go. The open carry.
That's what would get it. So let's talk a little bit about Grow South. Because, you know, it's well-intentioned. I don't see a whole lot going on, but other than the horse park.
Well, what is it, first of all?
Well, first off, you know, in preparing, you know, for the campaign, in doing my homework, I looked at the Grow South, the year two report card, and I'm also being told and being informed, too, by folks that are involved in these campaigns and these programs that not one of these programs actually started during the mayor's watch. They started a while back. And then some folks are not even calling it Grow South. They're calling it Slow South, and they're calling it Grow West. There's a lot of folks in the South that are still living off of septic tanks. I had the opportunity to meet with African-American landowners in the southern sector where they're still waiting for, you know, sewer lines to be laid. Money is there, but yet they see a golf course developing, a big box developing, a fast food chain, you know, developing.
And a place for their horse.
And a place for their horse. And where is that money going? Is that going to local businesses? Is that resulting in jobs in the local economy? And a very high-profile, very good friend of mine, an ex-city council person from Oak Cliff, visited my office, you know, a couple weeks ago. A lot of respect for him. He served during Ned Strauss's term as mayor. And he says, Marcos, hey, the raising houses, you know, demolition houses, we did 200 a year. That's nothing new. It's not just getting an empty lot. It's getting the family in there to take over the house so you don't have to, you know, demolish it. And in addition, Marcos, when the Dallas Morning News is giving the mayor, or the mayor is giving himself grades, they need to ask themselves, what are the metrics? How is this? How are we defining success? Are we looking at the property income levels? Are we looking at jobs created? Are we looking at a particular series of zip codes? Are we looking at income levels being basically elevated? So we need to have very clear metrics, and that not just be, and you know, they're saying where they're suffering from grade inflation, when they say, you know, Grow South is basically, you know, really working. Well, then bring to me a citizen or a neighborhood group or a community-based group that's telling me that Grow South is basically working. But if you have to have a task force on poverty and take these recommendations, which a lot of these community-based organizations have been giving the city for over a decade, that tells you there's a lack of fundamental understanding of what are the fundamental truths, the fundamental problems with respect to poverty, not just in the southern sector. We have poverty all over city. North Dallas doesn't look like what it used to look like either, right? We now have empty malls. In the north, we have blighted neighborhoods. In the north, we have decaying buildings. In the north.
When I first moved here, I lived in the Vickery neighborhood right near North Park, which was a nice neighborhood. It was fairly new at the time. Now it's one of the poorest neighborhoods in the city.
Yeah. Yep. I think we have abandoned malls in any part of the city. I know when we first got here from Washington, D.C., Valley View. Remember the Greenville area, the, you know, but where all the yuppies used to live and all that. And then you have gentrification. So it's not so much, you know, new housing and new development. Is what do you do with the folks that are living there now? Where do they go? And are they going to be worse off or better off? And that's why I like to argue for an enlightened economic development policy that has a 360 wraparound in neighborhood development, just like you have a 360 wraparound with that neighborhood school. And by a wraparound, all I'm meaning is your social services, the economics, the social, the cultural, the health aspects, you know, of your economic development. And I think that anytime you make a decision at City Hall, whether it's a toll road or to fill a pothole on Lemon Avenue, the city council and the mayor need to ask themselves first and foremost, will this have an adverse effect on any sector of our community, on any neighborhood in our community? Mm-hmm. They need to ask that question first. That should be your litmus paper test.
Mm-hmm. Most of the things that I've seen them quote about Grow South as accomplishments have actually been Oak Cliff, which is south.
Thank you for making my point.
Yeah, which is south, but most people, when you think of poverty in South Dallas, it's not the neighborhoods in Oak Cliff. I remember my last house when I moved into it, I was telling people where it was. A lot of people who, you know, who knew me, they came over to the house and they said, oh, well, this is nice. And because I had described it as it was a traditionally black neighborhood. It was south of Keyes Boulevard. In the 1950s and 60s, it was zoned. Black people could not live north of Keyes Boulevard at the time. So that was the traditional black neighborhood. So I was just describing it that way. And they said, well, this is nice. I said, yeah. And they said, well, you said it was a black neighborhood. I said it was black. I didn't say it was poor. Right. You know, like, LaRon, you don't live in a poor neighborhood. just because you're living there.
Just because I'm living there, absolutely.
Right, exactly. But it was always a nice middle-class neighborhood. Yeah, right. But South Dallas, you know, east of 45 has been terrible. Is there a new supermarket there? I'm not talking about a horse park, because I was kidding when I said they have a place for their horse now. Horses are expensive to keep.
In visiting with pastors out in South Dallas last week, I mean, they believe in their hearts, and they're there from the community, that this has been by design. It's not an accident. And then when you take the editorial that came out, I believe by George Battle III, it came out, I think, last Friday, where they talked about I-345 and the impact that had on an African-American middle-class, you know, neighborhood. We need to be basically students of history. And you can't begin to develop a community if the community is not prepared for development. And by that I mean, going back to this respectful councilperson that visited me the other day, he says in South Dallas, you have to have a community development plan. You have to prepare the community for development, which talks to the infrastructure, the zoning, tree mitigation, the busing and transportation policies, development incentives, stormwater management, and the education in their local schools. All of these issues need to be addressed before you can even begin to talk about economic development. And then worse, who is doing the economic development? Is it community-based economic development, or is it happening with a group that's outside that community? So where is the investment?
I think it was the neighborhood who said, we need a golf course. I can go shopping all the way up in North Dallas, but we need a golf course locally.
Got to work on that slice.
You know, it's as we wrap up here, we were talking about the poverty task force, and there's a domestic violence task force, and it seems like those task forces are studying and trying to gather recommendations, and we have a mayor's LGBT task force, and we have been around for about 6 years now, longer 7 years, and you know, we hit the ground running. We said we know what we need. We just need the cooperation of the council and the mayor to get this stuff going. And I would hope that the poverty task force and the domestic violence and all the other task forces can have that kind of expertise, you know, to hit the ground running and such. Would you continue those efforts as mayor, including the LGBT task force?
I definitely would continue. Yes, I would continue them, but I couldn't rely on them, right? You have to rely on the city, on our taxpayer dollars, on our budgeting, on our actual policies to move the needle for you. I see that as citizen input. I think that's great. But I wouldn't want to say, oh, I have a task force, and we're going to have a conversation, and we're going to do the same thing next year. Thank you very much for these recommendations, and we'll see where we're at. No, I think it needs to be ingrained in the fabric of City Hall. And budgeted dollars, allocated resources need to be put forward. And until you do that and you pass related ordinances to implement your recommendations, it's all talk.
So it's like we did. We just ride the offices of each council member.
Marcus Ronquillo.
Thank you, Marcus.
Election day is May 9th. Get out and vote. No matter who you vote for, we have city council. We have a couple of county school board elections and mayor.
Thank you for allowing me to share some time with you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.